All right, so I'm going to have a discussion about the genocide that is happening in Palestine right now. Genocide propagated by the Israeli government. Israeli government. Right? Not a religion, a government. And I'm saying this because so very often in the West, we fall into this trap. And when I say we, I mean me. I actually did it in this interview. We fall in the trap where we try to sensationalize things and dumb it down without knowing the full history or even knowing what the problem is. So most of y'all know about the October attack on Israel. But do you know about the occupied lands? Do you know about Palestinian homelands that after the establishment of Israel that are still being stolen? Because the Israeli government is expanding their reach into the occupied territory where Palestinians live it and taking their land. Do you know about the two-tier system in Israel, where Palestinians are treated differently than Israelis in Israel? I'm quite sure you didn't, because I didn't know about that, right? And it has to be criticism. It has to be criticism of a government, and especially a government that America is propping up. If we're giving money to a government, we have to ask, how is this government using their money? And are we okay with them using their money to occupy another land and subjugate another group of people? And don't fall for the trap when people try to talk about anti-Semitism, right? Like, there is a lot of anti-Semitism towards Jewish people, but there's also a lot of Islamophobia to our Palestinian brothers and sisters, where we try to make everybody basically a terrorist. We do that. Like, the counter argument for anybody asking questions about what Israel is doing right now is, well, what about Hamas? What about ISIS? What does that got to do with anything, guys? Like, yo, every Palestinian I have spoken to, and I've spoken to like about four people, nobody recognizes Hamas. Do you know Hamas was formed in 1987, guys? Like, for all intents and purposes, nobody recognizes Hamas as a legit government. They really don't. They were elected one time and never left power. Not a legit government. Like, most people in Palestine don't rock with Hamas, dog. So don't use Hamas as a feature not to look at what Israel is doing and how they're bombing colleges, bombing hospitals. And I ask questions. Like, the answer can't be, well, Hamas was there. Really? Really? So you're gonna bomb a hospital, kill kids? Because Hamas is there? Really? When it's understood that most people don't even rock with Hamas? You can't do war crimes, which is what Israel is doing when you bomb hospitals, you bomb colleges and schools. You're committing war crimes. You can't do all that because we gotta stop Hamas. No, dude. The question has to be asked. And don't let these people feed because you're asking the question that you're anti-Semitic. It's not anti-Semitic, dude. It's accountability, right? You can't skirt accountability by saying that's anti-Semitic. It has nothing to do with a religion. It's about a government and what a government is doing to another group of people. Another group of people who want their own government. But the current Israeli leader said, no, we'll never do a two-party solution. Bro, there is videos of checkpoints all throughout the West Bank and the Gaza Strip of Israeli soldiers, man, just, man, telling Palestinians what they can and can't do, telling where they can and can't go. Like, watch the videos, dude. It's apartheid, bro. It's apartheid and it's occupation. That's undeniable. So very often we hear about one side and we try to ask about that one side because that's what's being propagated in the media. But for a lot of Palestinians, man, this is personal. This is home. They're losing people, dog. And they're trying to tell you why they're upset. And we don't listen. In general, we don't listen. And we try to make it to people, what about this? What about that? And once again, I'm guilty about this. Like, I'll be honest with you guys. I'll pull the curtain back. During this interview, I asked about Hamas. And the truth of the matter is, we talk about Hamas because they did that attack in October, but this ain't about Hamas. This is about a group of people because of colonialism are living in an apartheid system where one government is in control of everything they do. The Israeli government is in control of everything people on the West Bank do. They control the border. They control the land. They control the internet. Israel controls all of that. There is no power unless Israel wants them to have power. Israel has an ultra-conservative right-wing leader who's been in power for 16 years. 16 years. Tried to get rid of the Supreme Court. Facing problems himself. Who was actually giving money to Hamas. Are we not supposed to ask questions? Are we just supposed to forget about it? Like, no, dude. Take that out of the equation and listen to what the people are saying. They're saying, look, man, we ain't got no land. We ain't got no homeland. And that's because we don't know the history. And they're taking their land. So it's about land theft. It's about apartheid. It's about oppression. And that's what we need to be asking about. Like, what are we doing about that? And should American dollars be going towards that? So I found a Palestinian willing to talk to me about this. We're going to call her Stacy. And I'm going to break this down in two parts. So here's part one. Coming out of this podcast, just a man doing the best he can with what he got. And right now I'm talking to a friend of mine about the current conditions in Palestine. And let me just tell you guys right now, this is not going to be a contentious argument. This is a discussion. And this is not going to be a religious argument. We're not going to talk about religion. So very often, I feel like we try to make this a religious war. And this is not. This is totally political. We're talking about the nation of Israel and their treatment of the Palestinians. This is not a Jewish versus Muslim discussion. This is not a Christian discussion about how Christianity fits. We're not talking about that. We're talking about human rights and atrocities from one nation perpetrated on another nation. So very often we look at this through the lens of religion. Not gonna do that here, guys. Not gonna do this. And Western media tends to only talk about Israel and Israel's rights to exist in their rights. You don't hear about Palestinian rights in Western media. I think that's wrong. I think that we are missing a wide chunk because we're not seeing the full story. So I have my guest here today, who I will call Stacy, to talk about that and some of those atrocities. Now, undoubtedly, some of y'all are going to disagree, and that's okay. I welcome all your conversations, but I will give her the floor. And first, I would just like, Miss Stacy, please talk to me about Zionism, where it comes from, what is it? Because like most people, I don't think I know what it is.
Hi, thanks for having me today. So Zionism originated in Europe, and as you know, the Jewish people have a very painful history over many thousands of years due to racism. We all know the horrific effects of the Holocaust in Germany. In 1933, they were facing relentless persecution all over Europe as a direct consequence of white supremacy. But whatever the European Jews at the time were experiencing, it was a very different experience for the Jews that lived in the Arab and Islamic worlds. There's a Jewish Israeli historian named Avi Shlaim. He wrote the book War and Peace in the Middle East. And he describes that the Jews under the Arab world and under Arab rule were allowed to practice their religion freely. They were protected under Islamic law. It didn't, so whatever applied to usually Muslims in terms of land rights and whatnot, the Jews were still afforded the same rights. And it goes on to say that they had basically a different experience than the European Jews. So at the time, Palestine, which was under Ottoman rule at the time, under Islamic rule, you had Jews, Christians, and Muslims all living and coexisting and living together.
That was a thing.
Yeah. So they were an integral part of the economy, of the political system, of the cultural fabric of the Arab world. They viewed themselves, the Jewish Arabs, viewed themselves as Arab and a big part of society. This time in Jewish history was known as the Golden Age. Again, a very different experience than the Jews in Europe experienced. So if we go back to Europe, as a direct response to white supremacy in Europe, Zionism, the idea that Jews needed their own homeland
to go to,
so that they can avoid this sort of persecution and racism. And they felt that if they had their own homeland, they could live in safety. And it did gain a lot of popularity in Europe, not just among the Jewish population after the Holocaust, but it gained a lot of support from the European states, who essentially, they didn't want the Jews. They didn't want them to be a European problem. And they didn't believe that the Jews could be a part of the European identity.
Couldn't assimilate, huh?
Exactly. Right. This wasn't just across Europe. In the United States, we at the time were passing strict anti-immigration laws as well. So white supremacy was not just centered, you know, in Europe. It's actually, as you know, a colonial, part of the colonial identity, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So between 1947 and 1948, after the Holocaust, 130,000 Jews from Europe migrated to Palestine after the Holocaust, and they were welcomed by the Arabs in Palestine. But more and more illegal settlements started getting set up across Palestinian lands. So within a very short period of time, the Palestinian people experienced a double occupation, if you will. So first by the British after the Ottoman rule, and then with this big wave of this big influx of immigration from Zionist Jews. Now, the immigration itself was not an issue. The immigration itself was welcomed. Everyone knew about the atrocities of the Holocaust. And they, again, were living amongst Jews and Christians, right? And it was a society of Jews, Christians, and Muslims. So they welcomed the Jews that had endured the Holocaust after World War II. But because there was this idea of Zionism that was promoted by white supremacy, they believed that now the new land that they occupied needs to become a Jewish state.
Which was perpetuated by Europe. And you said something about the Ottoman Empire, and I think it's good to put a pin in that, because at the fall of the Ottoman Empire in November of 1922, the Palestinian people were promised that land. If I'm wrong, correct me, but that land was promised to all those people for helping the British fight that war.
Right.
And what happened was, like you said, because of white supremacy and they didn't want the Jewish problem to get out of hand in Europe, they went back on that promise and said, hey, why don't y'all go over here to this land we promised to somebody else? Well, I ain't gonna say promise to somebody else. People fought for.
Right.
So when people, I think it's good to know the whole history of this, because people are like, well, Jewish people was always there. It's like, no.
Well, no. Arab Jews were always there. Yes, Arab Jews were always there. So we're talking about an ethnicity. So this conflict, the root of it is an ethnic cleansing. So people need to understand that Zionism affects the Arab Jews as much as it does the Arab Muslims and the Arab Christians in this conflict. It has this ideology is targeting an ethnic group. It's not targeting a specific religious group. So, for example, the genocide that's happening in Gaza today is not discriminating between whether you are a Christian Gazan or a Muslim Gazan, right? It's just an indiscriminate killing, right? By May 1948, with the help of the colonial powers, most of the land was seized by the Zionists, and it accounted for 80% of the land that was seized. Now, at that time, even with only 20% of the land, which is now the, it's actually, back then it was more than what the West Bank is, because now the West Bank is dotted with settlements, right? But even then, in 1948, they were still promised a Palestinian land, but it would be on the remaining 20% of the land. So the West Bank and the Gaza Strip and East Jerusalem, which was included as well.
So that's the geography of it. So you guys can kind of see how these lands were formed. That's how. But it's, and correct me if I'm wrong. If I'm wrong, let me know I'm wrong. But there's been a push from Israel to claim more and more land, pushing the Palestinians farther and farther west. Am I wrong about that?
Yes. So because Zionism in its core ideology states that it's a land for the Jewish people and that they believe that a certain point thousands of years prior, they were driven out, they feel like they have claim to that land through divinity, that God promised them that land first. I'm sorry, what was your question?
Well, has Israel been pushing and getting and occupying more and more land? And if that is the case, my point is, when is it going to stop?
Right.
Because if you're taking land, and more and more and more, eventually the people whose land you're taking are going to get pissed off and say, hey, man, maybe you should stop taking my land.
Right. So Israel is a country that, probably the only country in the world that doesn't have defined borders, which means that they don't actually stipulate where their borders start and end. That's because if you do follow that it is divinely promised, then it actually goes beyond the West Bank. It goes into Jordan.
Can't argue with God.
Beyond, right? And it goes beyond Gaza into Egypt, and it goes, you know, so it really extends. When Benjamin Netanyahu stood in front of the UN Security Council in September, he held up a map that included more than the political border of Israel to the Security Council and claimed that it was Israel. So it included other contested territories like the Golan Heights, the Sinai Peninsula in Egypt. So again, it is more, it's becoming more about land theft and expansion and occupation and less about its original premise, which was creating a safe haven for the Jewish people. Exactly.
Can I say something real quick about that? And for anybody who's listening to this and you want to say this is anti-Semitic, this is not. We are questioning and critiquing a nation. Israel is a nation. This is not anti-Semitic. I'm questioning the actions of a nation. A nation, and should they be actually expanding their borders and taking land from another people, a sovereign people? That's my question. Much like my podcast about Russia occupying Ukraine, and I'm like, well, what gives Putin a right to go into a sovereign nation and take the land? I'm asking the same thing with Israel. So the notion of critiquing a nation cannot be seen as anti-Semitic. I just want to point that out to anybody who's listening to this who may be getting a little butt hurt.
I appreciate you saying that. I don't think any government that rules over any people is above any criticism.
So they rule. So the Israeli government rules over the Palestinians. How is that? Could you talk about that a little bit?
Okay, so let's go back to talk about how Judaism is fairly implicated in the establishment of Israel. In 2018, the Israeli Knesset, which is similar to our Congress, equivalent to our Congress, they passed a law stating that the right to exercise your national self-determination, right? And this is what Palestinians have been seeking all along, self-determination. So the right to exercise that self-determination in the state of Israel is only unique to the Jewish people. So in other words, it outright denies Palestinian existence as a people, even on Palestinian land. So we talked about the West Bank and Gaza. So this discrimination in practice is not only in practice, it's codified by law. It's a deliberate part of their constitution and a part of their Israeli society. And I'm sure you've heard Israel being accused of being an apartheid state, right?
Yes.
Okay, so that's where that comes from, that they have separate laws for separate people based on your ethnicity. Okay, so in the state of Israel, I'm sorry, if you want to call the entire area Israel, it, whatever they claim is under their rule, there are 13 million people that live in under either Israeli law or under the illegal military occupation. 13 people in that land, from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea. And if you want to take the population of the West Bank and Gaza, that's 5 million people that have every aspect of their life controlled without having any rights from the Israeli government. They don't have any voting rights. They don't have any land rights. More and more land is being taken to establish settlements. They have limited movement. They have to go through a series of checkpoints. They cannot travel to Israel. If people are living in, say, the United States, family members, and they want to go visit their family in, say, the West Bank, they have to fly into Jordan and cross over. They can't fly directly into Israel.
You can't fly into Israel?
No, we cannot. Wow. Even as a Palestinian American, I cannot. Because they have these laws extend not only to the Palestinians, but to the Palestinians in the diaspora. So all the Palestinians and their entire family and lineage that were expelled from Palestine.
I want y'all to hear that. Hear that, guys. So if you are an American Palestinian, you cannot fly from Nebraska to Israel. You got to go to Jordan and cross over.
If you want to go into Gaza, it's under a complete blockade, but you can get a special permit if you're proving that you're going there for medical or something that's pertinent.
Wait, you got to have papers?
Yeah, you have to have a permit. Exactly. So from Gaza, you have to cross from Egypt.
Wow.
But an Israeli or a Jewish American, say, living in New York, whose family originated, say, from Poland, has more rights to that land than the indigenous people living there, because it's based, the laws are based on ethnicity.
Can I say something real quick?
Yes.
You're hitting a lot of points. And the more I hear about Benjamin Netanyahu, the more I really just despise the man. Because it seems like Israel's government has been super duper right wing, kind of like a Trump situation in America, dare I say it. And the man has been trying to do things, take over the Supreme Court over there. And it seems like a lot of the Israeli people don't like the guy, but he's running the nation in the ground. My point of saying that is, and you ain't got to speak on this, but when the terrorist attack happened, if you want to call it terrorist attack happened. They were trying to oust out Netanyahu. And I'm saying this because I see parallels between what W did in Iraq. It's like he took a horrendous event and made it so now the blame was off of him. But then later on, it came out that he was funding the group that attacked. Right. So once again, I'm still at this point where I feel like I need to start looking deeply at the nation of Israel and their leadership and what they're doing. And I should be concerned because a lot of American dollars go to prop up that nation.
Right. And you're not the only one asking questions. Israeli citizens are demanding questions. They want to know what happened. And it's shedding a lot of light on how these resistance movements came to be. There's a lot of evidence to suggest that the current ruling party propped up and funded these other terrorist organizations in order to dismantle the peace process and in order to delegitimize the talks, other secular Palestinian and human rights advocacy groups and other secular political parties. So yeah, you are right. And you're not the only one asking those questions.
But the question has to be asked. You have to literally ask why this is happening. And if you have links between a corrupt leader and this attack, then I kind of look inward. Like, seriously, the killer may be in the house.
Well, if you want to look in the house, you know, right after the October 7th attacks, the Israeli government right off the bat sought parallels between their terror attack and what happened in 9/11.
9/11, yep.
And if we know the course that set the trajectory of what happened in the Middle East after post 9/11 and with the lies linked to weapons of mass destruction, you need some red herring, right, to wage war. How do you justify land theft and the expulsion of 2.4 million, a million people without having some sort of a red herring?
Funny parallel, you said 9/11. I remember vividly in my head the reason why I got out of the Army. And the reason why I got out of the Army was WMD. When I saw Colin Powell go up there with Condoleezza Rice and say, WMDs, mushroom clouds. And I saw the focus switch from Afghanistan, which we know a lot now, but at the time we thought Bin Laden was in Afghanistan. I myself, patriotic guy in the Army, was like, yeah, let's do this, let's go. But I saw the switch from Afghanistan to Iraq and Saddam Hussein, and I felt expendable, which was the exact reason why I got out. I was like, no, I can't do this no more. I got to get out. This makes no sense to me. I see the exact same thing happening in Israel. Like, you had all this turmoil going. I keep going back to the dude was trying to get rid of the Supreme Court. He's trying to make himself be a leader. And when I say dude, I mean Netanyahu. The man's been in power way too long. He's literally, in my opinion, not putting words in anybody's mouth, the man is a forever dictator.
Yep.
Trying to strip away power, strip away norms and governments, which I thought this was a democracy. I thought America was supposed to be propping up Israel because it's a big and a hope in the Middle East. And yet you see a corrupt, ultra-right leader taking away all of the standards and norms that we pretend is America, which look, we got our own problems too. We can talk about that in a minute. But all the practices and norms in Western society, democracy, supposed to uphold, and they stripping it away, but we ask no questions.
You know, we say that history doesn't repeat itself, but
it echoes.
It echoes, exactly. And the fact that they invoked the 9/11 narrative is because they know directly they're talking to the American people. And the propaganda coming out of there is directly to the American people. They're speaking to the American people. Okay? That's their audience. That's where they get their support from. That's the reason they're able to wage this genocide. But we can talk about American interests in a little bit. I do want to say that, you know, in that area there is 13 million people living, and when you subtract the different ethnic groups that are not covered under that, the nationality law, it comes down to only 6 million people, 6 million Jews that have rights under, full rights under Israeli law.
When you say full rights, you mean the right to vote, the right to own property?
Correct. Well, okay, so there are 1.6 million Arab Israelis that live in Israel. Okay, they were part of the original Jews, Christians, and Muslims of Arab ethnicity that were not expelled after 1948. So when 750,000 to 1 million people were expelled from Palestine to make it into Israel, a population that remained. And so that population grew into what is now 1.6 million people. So they are able to vote and they are able to run for election. But as we know how corrupt elections work, you know, they never become electable, or they're electable in ways where they have no influence. But in terms of land rights, most of the land of Israel is owned by the Jewish Land Fund. And so it doesn't allow Arabs to own land. So whatever home you have in Israel proper is your home until it gets taken away. And it can get taken away at any point.
Is that the same for Israeli people? Or is that just Palestinians or Arabs in Israel?
Arabs in Israel. You have the remaining 6 million who are Jews that from elsewhere in the world who have immigrated there to seek citizenship.
And they can own land there?
And they can own land.
So it should... I'm sorry. Yeah. Do you think that's used as a lightning rod, though? Because I've seen not to conflate everything to the gold standard of suffering black people, but I've seen a lot of people say, hey, Michael Jordan is a millionaire. So, hey, black person in despair and underserved community who've never had any money or opportunity or resources given to you, you can make it because Michael Jordan made it. I mean, like, dude was 6'4" and had a wicked fadeaway. Because I hear a lot that, well, Israel, look at them. They have Arabs in there. Do you think that is kind of used to deflect from some of the problems they're having too?
That, like, because they have Arabs?
Mm-hmm.
As a way to say, now we are...
Yes.
Democratic.
Yes.
Okay. So if those full rights are not applicable to them, is it real sense of equality? For example, if you look into the United States, right, and you, as you stated, racial issues that prevents upward mobility, correct? But then you can't point to the one or two exceptions to the rule to say this is applicable to everyone, right?
Everything's okay, guys. We got Michael Jordan.
Correct. Exactly.
It's okay, guys. It's cool. Look at Michael Jordan. It's all right. We did it, guys. The dream. It's being lived
now. Exactly. Exactly. So there are Arabs in Israel. They are not allowed to fully integrate in with Israeli society. So they go to different schools than Jewish Israelis, if we look at, again, our own history, how separate but equal societies work. It's not based on justice and it's not based on equality. Mm-hmm. When you have Jewish schools versus Arab schools and you have the amount of funding where just a small percentage of funding goes into those Arab schools just that to kind of familiar. Placate, right? Does it sound familiar? It's the same sort of thing. I want you to know the crux of this problem is colonialism, and all colonial powers work the same. We were a colonial settler colony. Israel is a colonial settler project. All these colonial countries work the same, right? So it's not very hard to extract from our own sordid past and our own history with racism and the way we treated certain groups of people to say, okay, I can see similarities there. In fact, it actually looks like a copy-paste situation.
So that's why I wanted to talk to you today, because I do feel like Western media props up Westernism. Mm-hmm. There's no, and I guess all history is propaganda and all governments are like guilty of doing this, but nobody ever asks about the other side. Like, okay, but what about what's happening over here? And if you just utter that, it's instantly, no, you're wrong. You know, you see the same thing now in African nations. People from Nigeria going to England and Germany and in places in Europe. And they're like, well, why are you coming mm-hmm. to Europe and taking our jobs? Should we not be protective of our jobs? I'm like, wait. Y'all came to Africa, ripped it. The resources are still propping up your countries. But now when the people are trying to get into your country
right.
for more opportunities in the infrastructure they helped build, you're like, nope, you can't have it. And once again, colonialism, it follows the same blueprint. You right. see it happening in Israel. You're taking the resources, the land, and then not let the Palestinians buy in. Am I wrong? Am I seeing this wrong? Because if I'm wrong, you say I'm wrong.
Well, the crux of the issue is not, I mean, there is a lot of discrimination happening in Israel proper, but that's not where this conflict lies. It lies in the territories that are recognized by the UN to be illegally occupied. So the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. And these areas is where most of the land theft and most of the human rights violations are being done. Because people in Israel, even the Arabs, still have a sort of recourse, if you will. They could, even at a superficial level, even if it just looks like democracy on paper, they can still file for fighting this sort of unjust system in the courts, right? Even if it takes, you know, years and years, some people have their homes taken away in Israel proper because they, quote, did not have the correct permit. Or building permit. And maybe this home was established before the state of Israel, right? So that's where you see those images of Israel bulldozing homes or trying to go into East Jerusalem, which is, again, just annexed by Israel, and taken more and more property. But those people still have some sort of, even if it looks like a facade, a legal recourse to try to get their rights or fight for their rights or whatnot. Mm-hmm. It's the people that are in the occupied territories that have zero rights. So those living in the West Bank and those in the Gaza Strip.
So what do you think the solution is? Is there a solution? Because I don't want to just talk about the problem or what should be happening.
I mean, the solution, first and foremost, the immediate solution is a ceasefire right now in Gaza. That's number one. And let the humanitarian aid come in. But on a bigger scale, all those illegal settlements, again, recognized by the UN Council as being illegal, they need to go back into Israel. You don't need to continue your settlement building into the West Bank.
Well, you said Israel. Thank you for saying Israel, because I always hear the argument, Israel has a right to exist, but I never hear any of my Palestinian, Saudi Arabian friends, or even Egyptian friends say Israel shouldn't exist. I feel like that is a talking point that's thrown at me all the time. Israel has a right to exist. I'm like, well, who says it doesn't exist? It's exactly there. Of course, we're giving money to it. Of course it exists.
Exactly. Well, okay, so nobody is disputing the legitimacy of Israel to exist, okay? Nobody is disputing the right for Israel to defend itself, okay? But the American public, they don't know the geopolitical map of Israel. So they think it's including the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, okay? So what that becomes is sort of a way to gaslight, right? When you say Israel has a right to exist or Israel has a right to defend itself.
Does it have a right to steal? Does it have a right to steal,
exactly,
people?
Exactly. What's not being said is Israel has a right to exist in the way that it's existing today, in the way that it continues its expansion into the occupied territories. Okay, that's what they're really saying. They're not saying Israel, nobody is disputing the right for Israel to exist. We established this back in 1948. 80% of the land went to Israel. Okay, Israel was established back then, but they took 80% of the land and that was established, right? And that was the establishment of Israel on top of another country, but it was established, right? And that left the occupied territories. At the time, they were not occupied, but the West Bank and the Gaza Strip was where the Palestinians were forced, if they were not forced into other lands. You know, they went into Lebanon, Syria, into Jordan and Egypt. So it pushed that indigenous population out, and Israel was established. Nobody is denying the right for Israel to exist and to provide a safe haven for Jews in Israel, okay? But the land, the issue today is the land theft beyond its borders. When these events in the world are usually happening, it's important to pay attention to what's happening in Congress. That's what I was always taught, that usually there's this distraction happening to see what Congress is trying to pass. And in November of 2023, at the height of the genocide, the House passed a resolution 894 that stated anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. So if you critique the Zionist state of Israel, you are by definition of that House resolution, you are anti-Semitic. We're, I think, in a time where we can't really differentiate between being unsafe and uncomfortable. And what our government is currently doing is using that in order to pass increasing laws that are infringing on everyone's collective constitutional rights. I just want to highlight one organization in particular that is directly feeding into this anti-Semitism, and that's the ADL. So throughout this conflict, the Anti-Defamation League has been targeting pro-Palestinian human rights groups and other advocacy groups like the Jewish Voice for Peace and Not in Our Name and If Not Now, which are primarily made up of Jewish American voices that are anti-Zionist and calling for a ceasefire. The ADL has been targeting these groups in particular while embracing actual anti-Semites, people like John Hagee, who spoke at the March for Israel in Washington, D.C., people like Elon Musk. Okay. We've all seen, you know, their past tweets. We know that they can be, whether intentionally or unintentionally, anti-Semitic. John Hagee, he is intentionally and outwardly anti-Semitic, okay? But yet fully embraced by the ADL. So somehow the Anti-Defamation League sees students protesting with slogans like Free Palestine and From the River to the Sea, which is also considered another anti-Semitic slogan, according to that that House resolution. They see those slogans to be more dangerous to world democracy and to Jewish people than the actual racist people that wield power, right? And actually spewing anti-Semitism. And I just feel like this is a perfect analogy to the same inversion of power embedded in this, you know, very genocide, right?
It's so funny you say that, right? Because if you recall, Kyrie Irving made this anti-Semitic post about Hebrews and Negroes.
Yep.
And I was vehemently like against, like, look, man, we got to call this out as anti-Semitism. Because it was.
Right.
And something had to be done.
Yes.
Even when Kanye West did that anti-Semitic crap, I was quick to call out, like, look, man, black folks, we shouldn't be backing this. But I would be remiss if I didn't mention that I was taken aback by when college students in higher university was questioning the occupied lands and America's blind support to Israel and the money. The pushback was, young folks don't get it. They're anti-Semitic and it's TikTok fault. I found it weird that even the mere utterance of asking the question was seen as an affront to American democracy, Western ideas, and anti-Semitic. So I'm glad you brought that up, because that's a weird thing I've been dealing with too. As somebody who feels like I'm totally against anti-Semitism. Totally. Like, you can look at my track record. Of course. But like I said, me asking, yo, what is your government doing? Mm-hmm. And I find it funny because I feel like we conflate the religion, Judaism, the religion, and the state of Israel.
I would hope that Jewish Americans feel safe in America, and that if they are not safe, that we make every safeguard, every attempt, every education program to say this is wrong, to put everyone under, you know, to say that they are one thing or another based on their religious affiliation. When you said that you were surprised that they were going after Palestinian protesters, I actually was not surprised, because they have had a history of spying on private citizens, a history of spying on the NAACP. They were sued for spying on ACLU, for spying on the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee during post 9/11, on the United Auto Workers. So this just shows a history that they're not really for protecting civil rights or speaking out against anti-Semitism. What they're doing is, again, amplifying the Israeli agenda, basically, right?
So what is the agenda, you think? Because I have my idea of what I think the agenda is.
To provide unconditional support to the state of Israel, which includes weapons, which includes supporting them in their right to exist. And as I said, that means the right to exist as they are doing, which means continuing the expansion and settlements, to parrot the Israeli propaganda. We've seen this a lot during this genocide, where mainstream media is without fact-checking, not even fact-checking, things that are not even common sense, you know, just parroting and repeating it. But whether it is redacted later, it's already too late, right? Mm. It's already been put out there.
There's an example of that, wasn't it, in recent news where there was wrong information about the conflict over there, and then it was a redaction put out like a week later, was it?
Which one of the many times are you talking about? Propaganda exists on both sides. I will acknowledge that. But when you don't question it, when you think that somebody or one country that's rolling out this war machine is speaking fact all the time, and you don't feel like you can question it, and if you do question it, now you have a House resolution saying that's anti-Semitic. You can't say that. That's anti-Semitic. There's a problem. There has to be some sort of your gears in your head turning to say, wait a minute, there's something off here. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you wanted to not mention religion. And I say this, but I don't think they are religion. I feel like they are a cult, a political ideology. There's this weird relationship and partnership with the ADL and right-wing Christian Zionists. Okay. So if you didn't know, there are more Christian Zionists here in the United States than there are Jews. And when you're saying about the American interests, when Israel is putting these statements out, they're not talking about their American Jewish population, who are critical of Israel, who tend to be critical of Israel because we have more access to information. And we don't have, you can say there is censorship that exists here in the United States, but it's not as strong as the, what do you want to call it, programming, indoctrination that there is in Israel, right? We still have some sort of a access to freedom of, you know, the freedom of information, if you will. So this weird relationship with Zionists, Christian Zionists, I think this poses a more immediate danger to the ability of Jews and really everyone else to be who they freely want to be, because we know that their ideology, and you might disagree with me on this, because I do sort of lean more left, right? Mm-hmm. But their ideology and their institutions and their political influence that restrict our rights collectively to things like reproductive care, right? Abortion, mm-hmm. forcing prayer into public spaces, not prayer, their prayer. Their prayer into public spaces that lead the attacks on LGBTQ plus youth. It's these leaders and institutions that promote anti-Semitism, that promote anti-Muslim conspiracy theories. And so this actually leads to what? Actual violence, not a perceived notion of not being safe, but actual violence. We see this when there is, for example, you mentioned Hindu earlier, right? Well, I'm talking about the Sikh. Here, the shooting at Oak Creek Sikh Temple back in 2012 in Wisconsin. We see this in the shooting of the Tree of Life Synagogue that happened in 2018 in Pittsburgh. And most recently, three Palestinian students from Vermont were shot, leaving one of them permanently paralyzed. And let's not forget about the six-year-old from Chicago that was stabbed 26 times in his home, fueled by anti-Semitism, fueled by the machine that does this sort of feedback loop, right? That fuels, that perpetuates these actual acts of anti-Semitism. So the ADL is using its influence to reach out to, you know, universities. You said that it was very jarring to see, to shut down these protests, but they're not only shutting them down, they're asking for them
to have blind allegiance,
to be linked to, well, they're asking them to be linked to terrorist groups, right? So when you conflate the Palestinian people with Hamas, you're already saying they're ascribing to this political group, and therefore anyone speaking out against the genocide or speaking for Palestinian human rights is automatically now associated with terrorism because you've already set the precedent, right?
See, well, that's my thing, right? The blind allegiance and not being able to ask a question, and asking the question automatically means you're on the side of wrong.
Right. When
you actually can be, and I have this problem a lot because I'm slap dead in the middle, so it seems like I'm placating both sides in most cases. because I'm slapped there in the middle. When I ask the question, people are like, well, no, are you with them? Like, no, and I'm asking the question. It has to be asked. And the shutting down of ideas and questioning to me is problematic. So like when that happened and you asking, hey man, why are we sending all this money to Israel? Okay, well, that can't be seen. Well, you don't want Israel to do this. And since you brought it up, so I'm going to say it. There is a concerted effort to lump all Muslim people, all Arab people into one category. And we've been doing this since 9/11. So the boogeyman first was Al-Qaeda. That was the boogeyman. Every possible Muslim you saw walking down the street in America was Al-Qaeda. Now it's Hamas. Every person, Arab person you see now, you support Hamas. So now you can't ask any questions, because if you ask any questions that's contrary to America's stated position of being Israel's ally, now you're pro-Hamas, which is stupid. And this is what I'm trying to get everybody to see. Like, the very notion of questioning something can't be seen as anti-Semitic or problematic. Right. If that's the standard, you got to ask, what are you hiding? What is it that you don't want me to know? If I can't even ask the question, even as a young person, I can't be like, because you got to understand, guys, a lot of these young people now, they don't know the full and just history. And if you want to be honest, most Americans, including myself, don't know it. That's why when it first popped off, that attack first popped off in October, I went to talk to my Muslim friends, my Jewish friends, my Israeli friends, my Palestinian friends, to make my own opinion. And I almost did a podcast, but I talked to a friend who should remain nameless. And I was like, after talking to them, I was like, maybe you need to get more information, buddy. Like, you are not ready to talk about this. Or maybe you shouldn't even talk about it, buddy, because you're not qualified. And that's what I'm getting now. So please, guys, do your research. And when I say do your research, I mean actually talk to somebody, particularly Palestinian, if you can. Reach out and try to hear that side, because you're not getting that side.
I think it's important to seek Palestinian voices. I mean, read a book by a Palestinian author. See how it is living under occupation. Talk to a Palestinian living in the U.S. See what their experience is. I also think it's extremely anti-Semitic to say all Jews are Zionist. That is not the case. To lump an entire religion and to say they support Israel, and by definition, Israel's expansion, is anti-Semitic in itself. So, you know, I mentioned the Jewish American groups who are against Zionism, who are against this genocide, who are calling for a ceasefire. These most certainly are not anti-Semitic, and they don't view themselves as Zionist, but under that House resolution bill, they would be considered self-hating anti-Semitics.
When you said Christian Zionism, and I think it's really good to point out and put a pin on this before I let you go, about what Zionism is, right? So the definition of Zionism is a movement for originally the reestablishment and the development of protections of a Jewish nation that is now Israel. That's Zionism. So that's basically, like she said in the beginning, everybody's saying, okay, the Jews need a homeland, and that's Israel. Israel has been established. So in my opinion, you can disagree with me with this, Stacey, but if you're still pushing Zionism, why? There is a homeland for Jews. You got it. You won. There shouldn't be no more migration. And if you're... it's going to get me in trouble. I'm going to say it anyway. But if you're in America, an American, and you're pushing for Americans who happen to be Jewish to go overseas and reclaim their homeland, then get the fuck out of America. You're not American.
Not only that, serve in a foreign military.
Yeah, that's problematic to me. If you're American...
But that goes back to the white supremacy in Europe, that the Jewish people could not be part of the European identity. The Jewish people in America are most definitely part of the American identity. It's what makes America great. Okay, so the fact that we keep pushing the Zionism to say, yeah, Israel is the only place where Jews can feel safe, Israel is the only place that is a homeland for the Jews.
I find that problematic.
I do too.
Just like when people say, oh, we know all black folks need to separate ourselves and go back mm-hmm. to some African nation that we never know. I find that problematic too, because you're saying that, oh, we can't exist.
Exactly.
We would never be accepted. And all of this civil rights and this push for a better, more qualified America that's more inclusive, it's just bull. We can't do it. We all should separate. I don't like that notion. So anybody who's pushing Zionism now, I'm just like, why? No, right. Just kick it. You American, bro. Like, if your identity is steeped more in Americanism, then rock with America. The same with me.
Right.
Like, I get mad when people say African American. I'm like, bro, no, dog. My people built this goddamn country.
Right.
Like, dude, I'm exactly. American. That gets no more right. American than me. Like, yo. So qualifying
exactly.
me. And like hyphenating me, to me, is kind of an insult. I get where it comes from, but okay. I say the same thing. If you're pushing Zionism now, what the fuck are you really saying?
Right. Okay, so we are complicit. We're complicit in this genocide. We're complicit through our arms deal to Israel. Israel would not be able to commit its land expansion. It would not be able to commit to ethnic cleansing or this genocide if it wasn't with U.S. provided weapons. Okay, we provide 80% of the weapons to Israel. We've given Israel $320 billion of our taxpayer money, which comes out to about $10 million a day. Okay, this is not including the $10 billion for the missile defense system, not including the $14.3 billion that Congress just passed in additional spending, not including all these exemptions to bail out this welfare state. You know, we talk about, we don't have money in the US, we can't do this, we can't support these programs, we can't have student loan forgiveness, but yet there's always money for this war machine. In addition to that, the White House has permanently removed all safeguards to its weapons to Israel. So the American public is kept in the dark regarding these arms transfers, because they're done in secrecy and without any congressional oversight. So a man named Josh Paul, he was in charge of the arms deal for the U.S. State Department, and he resigned in protest because we are no longer using any congressional oversight. So this should raise some alarm questions. People in the industry who have arguably sold weapons to some of the most corrupt regimes in our history are saying something's not right here. So all these contingencies that we have when we sell weapons to other countries have been scrapped when we sell weapons to Israel. Mm-hmm. So we have things like, you've heard of the Leahy laws, you've heard of the Arms Export Control Act. These things are in place so that it safeguards us when we are selling weapons to foreign countries. And we're basically putting the contingencies on them that they are not going to be using them to commit human rights violations and war crimes, right? So these two laws are the reasons why the U.S., specifically the White House, no congressional oversight when we sell weapons to Israel. So if Israel isn't committing any human rights violations, what would they have anything to worry about by going through the proper channels that we make every country go through?
That's America too, trying to wash their own ass. So this yes. veneer of what we're doing,
oh,
does it
yes.
like, it's like trying to say, well, you know, we didn't know. Come on,
exactly.
guys.
Exactly.
Really?
Exactly.
You were doing that?
And you know, you in a lot of your podcasts, you've been talking more and more about our U.S. election seasons coming up soon. But we always talk about like Russia meddling in our elections. We talk about China's espionage. We never talk about Israel. The pro-Israeli lobbying groups like AIPAC here in the United States have been meddling in our elections from the beginning. So they are the ones that pushed for, before you have to give money to a certain candidate through PACs, right? Mm-hmm. To kind of shield yourself from bribery. Now you can give money directly to candidates. So in 2022 alone, AIPAC gave $50 million in campaign contributions directly to candidates.
On both sides.
Exactly. So not through PACs, just directly. And it's estimated to be higher in 2024. It's estimated to be closer to $100 million so that they can unseat people that have been critical of this pro-Palestinian human rights move. People like Rashida Tlaib, who's been an outspoken critic of the State of Israel. They've actually offered somebody to run against her. They've offered him $20 million of bribe money. You could say it's bribe money. So for years, AIPAC has injected millions of dollars into campaigns to unseat people who are not favorable to Israeli politics so that they can uphold this apartheid in the Middle East. And that's why you have bipartisan support for Israel in Congress. They've all accepted AIPAC money with the exception of a very, very few. Rashida Tlaib, I mentioned, was one of them. And so if you look at the top 20 political action committee, the PACs, Israel is the only one that is dedicated to a foreign government. That should be alarming. These people working for this pact in particular, I think, should be registered as a foreign agent. You're not working in the best interest of the American public. You're interfering in our elections to serve a foreign government.
I agree that, first, all money. Well, that's Citizen United who did that. But right. I ain't against anybody who slaps money to a politician, because once you're given money, you're beholden to that interest group. You can say you're not, but you are. I truly believe all campaigns should be public funded. Like, you shouldn't have any private money. And anytime a big interest group gives money, my eyes go up. I don't care what it is. Like, and I'm saying that as somebody who plans on getting into politics pretty soon myself. I'm fully cognizant of the money you take is, that's the side you're on. You may say you're not, but once you take the money, that's what the side, right. That's the people who own you. Well, I think that is the Common Knowledge Podcast. I want to thank my guest, Stacey, for being here with me. I greatly appreciate you saying something about this and just being able to exchange ideas, because undoubtedly, like I always say, man, maybe I'm getting something wrong. And I'm open to the fact I'm wrong, but you're going to have to lay it out to me where you think I'm wrong yet. So, you know, anybody who's listening to this, listen to it. Got any problems? Shoot at me. Don't shoot at Stacey. Shoot at me.
I honestly think if you do have problems with it, maybe I'm wrong in some regard. Maybe I have a personal bias, but I feel like if you can identify where your unchecked privilege intersects with somebody else's oppression, then you can have a dialogue to say, okay, something's got to change so we can achieve peace.